Rich Kimble here along with Bruce Pratt for Sports Lit 101, and we get a chance today to talk more about a book that generated quite a discussion a few weeks ago when we chatted about it. The book is called Sports Crazy, How Sports Are Sabotaging America's Schools, and we're pleased to be joined by the author, Stephen J. Overman. Steve, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me.
It is a terrific book that I think asks a lot of important questions. What drove you to write this book?
I guess it came out of my personal experience to some extent, and then also I've been an avid sports fan for most of my life, and I've seen things about how sports was evolving that concerned me. I guess, yeah, a combination of both, and, you know, writing other books about sport has made me think about these issues.
So what's the single biggest mistake that high schools in America are making?
Well, I think that they just overemphasize competition and elitism. I'm concerned that we need to put effort into helping all students achieve in you know, various areas, and I think we tend to overdo the other aspect of it on occasion.
Yeah, Steve, this is Bruce. I'm going to be in Germany in a couple of days, seeing a friend of mine who was an exchange student here, played professional handball over there, never played sports in school except at recess because schools don't have sport teams.
The book by Amanda Ripley that I cite, you know, she writes about other countries, and that experience you just mentioned apparently is quite common in some European countries.
Yeah, and at the University of Maine, we have Division I athletics, and we have a tremendous number of foreign athletes, probably a higher percentage than most any university I can think of. It doesn't seem to have hurt them any to have played for club teams or for city teams or for parts of a city team. Can you see a way that model is ever going to work in this country?
Well, you know, I cite John Gurdy and some other scholars in my book who say it's going to be a tough assignment to change it. It's really entrenched in our culture, and I talk a little bit in the book about approaches, but. Yeah, it's going to be hard. Sports fans are used to what's been going on, and they want to see an alternative. I think really it's going to have to start with the school systems themselves.
Steve, what role did Title IX play in this obsession that our schools have with sports?
Well, I'm afraid that for all the good things that Title IX did, I think the women's programs may have uncritically adopted some of the characteristics of the men's programs without really thinking through how they might want to change it. I remember back when schools had girls' athletic associations, and that was kind of an intramural program. And, when they went to full-fledged sports, I think sometimes they picked up some of the excesses of the men's programs. Of course, the good side of Title IX is now that the girls and women have equal opportunity, not equal, but better opportunity, I should say. It's still not quite exactly equal, but, you know, many more girls today are participating in sports. And I had a daughter who's an athlete, and you know, I think that's the best thing to come out of it.
I coached for a long time and had a lot of success coaching women in track and field. One of the things that I've noticed that I think is a good thing about Title IX is the women who play sports today act in the classroom the way they didn't act 30 years ago when they were told not to play sports, or 40 years ago. It does seem to have that positiveness. But it also, that positivity, I guess, but it also seems to me that you're right, that we're seeing women's sports more and more trying to emulate men's sports instead of becoming their own entity.
Yeah, I would agree.
One of the other questions I wanted to ask you about, and I thought you did just a brilliant job with this in the book, In Maine, surprisingly, the most popular high school sport is basketball. And we have an annual basketball tournament, which is blown up like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it becomes, there are people that have gone to every game for years and years and years. We have seen the really good effects on communities, the way communities will rally behind a little basketball team. It sounds like Hoosiers or something. But we've also seen that situation where you root for one team, you go to all these other games, but you actually root for other people to lose. So you can, how does that change in America? Or are we just gone down that path too far?
I think that the partisanship has gone a little too far. You know, we both hear, you know, just anecdotal incidents of fans misbehaving toward players on the other teams, and you know, fans have to be kept separated. And I mentioned in the book, there have even been situations where they've had to, you know, reschedule games and things because of the excess rivalry. There's no doubt that the communities rally around the teams and create kind of a community spirit. I point out in the book, you know, they could rally around a town team, you know, be the same spirit as a school team. But we don't see that semi-pro sports, you know, like we used to, and particularly in small towns, you don't see it. So, but I mean, yeah, there is that element. It's positive that communities rally around a bunch of kids.
We're talking with Steve Overman. His book is called Sports Crazy. As a teacher, as a former coach, a former athletic administrator, one of the things that I'm concerned with is that for these athletic experiences to be truly educational, I think they have to be valuable for everybody on those teams, not merely the best players, the starters, those who might go on to have a chance at playing beyond high school. Was there a tipping point? Was there one event or a series of events that sort of pulled us away from that to make it all about the best athletes and their opportunities to succeed post-high school?
Yeah, I think it was a gradual process over history. As I point out in the book, you know, the first high school teams were organized by students, and that had some problems too. So adults stepped in and took over. And I think just, you know, over time, parents and community members got more involved, and the focus on winning meant that you had to focus on just a few talented athletes, and so we started cutting kids from teams, and we've had more and more coaches now working with a fewer number of kids. But it's just kind of grown out of hand over time, I think, and we need to try to ameliorate some of this, competitiveness. I think it gets carried a little bit too far.
Well, of course, we also we've seen more opportunities for young people in athletics through schools, through communities and travel programs, but I'm not sure that more in this case is necessarily better. I know for schools what that means is you add sub-varsity programs, more middle school programs. It also means that fewer of your coaches are educators, and you get that professional coach mindset, which also isn't always something that goes hand-in-hand with education.
Yeah, and I touch, I got a section in the book on the professionalization of coaching, what you say is true. I mean, we see schools hiring more and more coaches today from outside the faculty, and it's because they have a hard time sometimes finding enough faculty to coach. I remember, junior high school principal cornering me in a hallway and said, "We need a track coach." And I said, "Well, I wasn't exactly a star track athlete." "That's all right," he said. "You can read the book and, you know, helps become a track coach," but I was on the faculty, of course. But you know, particularly with like football and basketball, we're seeing more and more coaches that come out of the community, and they may not have, you know, the best agenda from an educational standpoint.
And we're also seeing more and more playgrounds that are empty. Kids not just playing by themselves, only playing when it's an organized activity, only playing when there's a coach there, only playing when it's a little league game. I find that to be a very troubling sign to go by empty ball fields and basketball courts all the time and not see kids out just playing, just learning by playing.
Right. And coincidentally, the book I'm working on now, my next book, is about the demise of free play among children and adolescents. And it's exactly what you said, that I live in suburbia, we'll look out the window after school, and you don't see any kids out in the neighborhood, and it feeds on itself. And I think I cite a couple cases in the book where some cities won't even allow kids on public athletic fields without a permit. And, we used to crawl under the fence at the golf course and go out and play football on the back nine, and nobody ever saw us. But you're right, you just don't see kids and pickup games anymore the way our generation did.
Well, we've also taken their summer away from them, too, because so many sports now have become year-round pursuits, whether it's summer programs or weightlifting programs to get you ready for the coming season. The days of summer being about maybe playing a little baseball and working a part-time job and having a social life, those days are gone for high school athletes.
Right. And we're even seeing college coaches picking up on that. They're seeing kids by the time they get to college who have been overworked for so long. They have overuse injuries and strains, and some of them are getting burnt out. We're just overdoing it, and even some of the college coaches recognize that. Summers are much more structured than probably what you and I grew up with. You're right on target there, I think.
Well, we've seen this trend come to Maine in recent years, and I know it's been in bigger areas for quite a while, but it's the notion that now, seemingly, every time high school athletes commit to play in college, high schools are holding press conferences. Yeah. And I'm horrified by that. And not because we shouldn't be promoting those successes, but because we don't do that for the future scientists, the future actors, the future lawyers, whatever they might be. We only do that in athletics.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct. I've got a couple anecdotes in the book about pep rallies where, all the classes are canceled and all the students are brought into the gym and all the dignitaries come in from the community, and it's all focused on a young man who just signed a scholarship contract with the university, and the entire high school's there, and they make a huge ceremony out of it. And you're right, we don't do that for the top scholars or musicians or other things. That focus, I think, is troubling to me as well.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you, and I so enjoyed the book, is when you look at the genesis of this problem, are there some sports that are more responsible for this than others?
Well, yes, I think the revenue sports. And in most states, we're talking about basketball and football. And I make the point in the book when discussing athletics critically, you really kind of have to separate those big revenue sports from golf and tennis and sports like that. We don't see the problems there, I don't believe. But once it gets to be entertainment and we have to accommodate spectators they're getting revenue from tickets because they're underfunded. Schools, kind of have to go along with what's going on. And it's those sports, I think, where we really have the problems.
Patty Ross Tran, former Olympic cross-country skier and longtime track coach at Middlebury College, said to me she thought what was ruining women's sports for her, as what you said, the overtraining, the kid that thinks they have to run cross country, indoor track, outdoor track, and then have a summer running program. Do you think also the specialization has become more of a problem even than just kids doing sports year round?
Yes, I do. I think that's one of the big problems. The book that I wrote a couple years ago, before this book, was about children's sports. And it's troubling now that we're making kids one-trick ponies when they're still in elementary school. And, you think back, Jackie Robinson, I think, played four sports in college. And we still see a few two-sport and three-sport athletes. But coaches discourage it. When I was coaching track, I watched the high school track coach admonish a young man because somebody reported he was playing basketball, and he stood in his face and said, "You're not a basketball player, you're a track athlete. I don't want to see you playing basketball anymore, you might get hurt." And I remember that incident vividly because, like I say, when we were in high school, you saw a lot of three-sport athletes. I had a lot of friends that were three-sport athletes, and it does lead to overuse injuries, and it just makes kids narrow as far as their sporting experience.
So is there any way we can get this genie back in the bottle?
Well, I think one of the first things we need to consider is not putting so much pressure on coaches, high school coaches, to win. A lot of coaches, their contracts are not based on whether or not they're doing a good job in the classroom. As you know, your entire contract is based on whether they're winning games or not, and it gets ruthless. They have to do whatever they have to do to win, and again, that just escalates to where it's too much pressure. If we can take the pressure off of the coaches, I think it might help a lot.
Well, it is an excellent, thought-provoking book, Sports Crazy, How Sports Are Sabotaging American Schools. Stephen J. Overman, the author of the book. It's a great read. Steve, thank you so much for making time for us today.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. That was I really tell people, go out and buy this book because it's not preaching to the choir. Because it examines the problem and points out what the issues are, but it does offer some alternatives and some ideas. And if we don't discuss this, this is the elephant that stays in the room.
No question.
And we've seen too many kids ruined by it. I don't want to see it happen anymore. It has to.
That's Sports Lit 101 for this week.